Welcome to the Level Playing Field podcast with your host, David Yu, the platform where aviation and finances meet. Each week, David will be interviewing guests from all different careers in aviation who can help us explore how each career impacts a family's personal finances and lifestyle. Now, here's your host, David Yu.
Welcome, I'm David Yu, Certified Financial Planner Practitioner and host of the Level Playing Field podcast. This week, I interview Steve Smith. He started out his career as a regional airline pilot at Mesa Airlines. He eventually left the airline world and became a math teacher due to his love for people. He wasn't done though. At his high school, he was able to create and build an aviation pathway program from scratch where he now teaches ground school as an aviation instructor, introducing kids to various careers in the aviation world. To find out more about my aviation-related podcast and blog, please check out www.thelevelplainfield.com. That's the level, P-L-A-N-E, field.com. If you have any financial questions, consult your attorney, accountant, or financial advisor. If you're interested in how I help airline pilots as a certified financial planner practitioner, please visit www.pacunited.com. That's PACUnited.com. Steve Smith, welcome to the Level Playing Field podcast. So to introduce you, Steve, looks like you're the activities director and an aviation instructor at Canyon High School at Orange Unified School District, which is in Anaheim, California. So looks like you're a former airline pilot, and now you're currently teaching the aviation program over there at the high school, amongst other things. And what's unique about your situation, from what I understand, is there are very few high school aviation programs in the United States, and I'm excited to be able to talk to you about this. So welcome aboard, Steve.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for joining us. I'm excited to talk to you about this. But first of all, let's talk about yourself first. To start off, tell us a little bit about yourself. So who is Steve Smith?
I'm married. I've been married for 15 years, and I've got three kids, 11, 9, and 7, two boys and a girl. And they keep me very busy these days, and I love it. And then I'm teaching and still getting to fly a little bit.
Nice. Okay, nice. So you still, I guess, yeah, I was going to ask you a little bit later on, but you still get to fly a little bit nowadays?
Now it's a hobby. It's an expensive hobby. So I don't get to fly as often as I would like. And sometimes it's out of busyness as well. It's hard to find the time to go do that and have fun and just go fly. But I still get to go. And my family enjoys it, and once in a while, I'll go with a student.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's really cool that you still get to go up in the air. So just to start us off with, what got you into aviation in the first place? Like, at what age did you get into aviation, and when and how, I guess, did you decide to start with your licensing?
I would say I am not the norm as far as pilots go. I feel like there are a lot in the pilot world who grew up with a love and fascination for airplanes, and would go hang out at the airport and just watch planes take off and land. And I still hear that from some of my students. And that wasn't me. I never thought about being a pilot when I was growing up. Wasn't something I talked about. For me, I went through high school, went into college, went to Baylor University in Texas. And I went in as a pre-veterinary major. Wanted to be a veterinarian and was interested in something along those lines. And as I took classes and settled in, I wasn't loving the idea as much anymore. And I wasn't loving the science classes that I was taking. And I was thinking, man, I don't know if this is something that I can be passionate about for the next 8 years. There's so much schooling that if you don't love it, it becomes really difficult to keep up. So I said, well, maybe I need to reassess what it is I want to do as a career. So I started looking, and this was my sophomore year. I was still taking the science classes because I hadn't closed that door yet, but I was starting to talk to other departments on campus and trying to figure out what was out there and what careers were appealing to me. And it was tough. I talked to a lot of people, asked a lot of questions, and ended up in the aviation science department. And my brother had at one point talked about an interest in aviation. So I thought, well, I can get some information for him, ask some questions. And so when I sat down and we started talking and they were explaining the program to me, classes I would take, and they said, you know, you'd start your flight training next semester. It just kind of caught me off guard. I hadn't really thought about the idea of flying an airplane. And I said, so you're going to let me fly an airplane? And they're like, you have to, that's part of your degree. And I said, okay, it was interesting and it was different. And I liked the idea of pursuing a job that not everyone else was talking about. You know, and if you say I'm pre-med or pre-vet, you get a ton of those on a college campus. And I was like, this is unique and it's different. It was something I hadn't really considered. So I took information home for the Christmas break that year between my fall and spring semesters and talked it over with my parents. And they said, you know, if that's what you want to do, go for it. So I went back to school after the break and declared my major in aviation and started taking classes right away. And about a month in, I did my first flight lesson. So that was exciting. I did training through the rest of that semester. I went home for summer that year. So I took a little bit of time off from flying just while I was home for the summer and then came back in the fall and kept going. And then I got my private pilot's license and just kept going from there. So for me, being a college student, it was about a license every year. So I did my private pilot's license in about a year, and then my instrument rating in about a year, commercial license in about a year. Everything took about a year. And because I was late in declaring my major, I finished my classes before I finished my flying. So I finished all my classes. My last year at Baylor, I just had a lot of flying to do. And so I was working on that. I came back to California and did some training out here for my flight instructor's license and then ended up going back to Texas to finish everything up there and officially graduated in August of 2002.
Okay. Now, I know Baylor, from what I believe, is a little bit unique in that it has its own aviation program, right? Like just built into it.
Yeah. So there are four-year schools that have aviation programs, but it's definitely not something that's offered at the majority of universities. So it was really unique. I didn't know anything about it when I walked into that office. And to this day, I met with them when I was starting up my program here at the high school. And they said, yeah, we're still kind of pride ourselves on not being a big program that's out there promoting itself. At the time, they were happy with where they were at, and it was quality over quantity. And it is fairly unique. There are others, but it's definitely not everywhere.
Now, tell me, I'm not sure if you know like the exact figures, but like a program like that at Baylor, because they help you go through like all the licensing, right? All the way up to your commercial. Is that correct?
Yeah. As far as like, how does it factor into tuition and everything else?
Yeah, exactly. Like how much does that like aviation program like even cost? And, you know, is it, can you get student loans for it? Is it eligible for like scholarships or grants and, you know, like federal loans and stuff like that?
Yeah. So with flight training, if you wanted to just get all of your licenses and become a flight instructor and do all of that, you could do it at your local airport and never go to college. But doing it at a college, you're going to be working on a degree as well, whether it's an associate's degree at a community college or a bachelor's at a university. When you're doing it at a school, you do have more options as far as grants and scholarships and student loans. If you're doing it at your local airport, there typically are not student loans to help you cover that cost. And then my understanding is that most universities, this is the way it was for me at Baylor, and I'm assuming that it's the same way at most universities, your degree, your program is going to cost about the same as any other degree, but the flight training is an additional expense.
So like so you're talking about like the rental costs and maybe like the flight instruction costs?
Right. So with flight training, whether you're doing it at a university or a local airport, the costs are typically the renting of the airplane and the instructor that's flying with you and teaching you. And it's the same way, you're typically paying by the hour. So if you fly three times that week, you're going to pay for those three lessons. If you fly 10 times that week, you're paying for 10 lessons. And so the cost is usually it's a pay as you go.
Okay. Now, there's a minimum number of hours required in order to get to the regionals, to the airlines. Now, that they have something like built in where you were able to build hours like in the meantime, or did you have to go to like a local airport, like do the whole CFI thing? Like, how did you build your hours?
Yeah, most common is to become a CFI, which is a flight instructor. People go and they get their private, their instrument, their commercial, and then they become a CFI. And when you instruct other students, then you are able to log that time for yourself as well. So a CFI is typically your first paying gig as a pilot. Now you're making some income and you're getting to log time while you're with those students. That's typically the way people will build flight time. But even if you go rent a plane and fly your family out to dinner or something like that, all of that is loggable time, and it all counts towards that total hours that's required to eventually go to an airline. The difference is, are you paying for it or is someone else paying for it?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, I know this probably ranges a lot like throughout the country and just probably like how much work you get, but typically as a CFI, how much are you making? Like, what's the income range? And what's the schedule like actually as a CFI?
So start with schedule. It really depends on you. I know I instructed at a flying club here at Fullerton Airport in California, and I had a lot of freedom over my schedule. I could give myself the weekend off, or I could fly 24/7 if there were students that wanted that. I stayed pretty busy because I was wanting to build my hours, and that was my job. That was my income. So the more I worked, the more I earned. But it doesn't have to be that way. It could be, you could do a Monday through Friday. The problem is you're a little bit at the mercy of your student schedules. If they are busy all week long and the only time they can fly is on the weekend, then either you opt out and get them paired up with a different instructor, or you adjust your schedule and you start flying on the weekends. So there's flexibility, and it just depends. Sometimes you got to fly at night because students have to log a certain number of nighttime hours. And so maybe you're going in later that day so you can do some night flights as well. The schedule is very fluid, and it could be that weather's bad for a week and you're hardly flying at all. And then when the weather's great, you're trying to make up for lost time with students and keep them flying.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. And what's the typical like income range?
Yeah. And this is where I'm probably a little out of the loop just because it's been so long since I've done it. I know we had a speaker come into our class not that long ago, and he mentioned flight instructor pay being somewhere in the 45 to 55,000 range, which is really good compared to when I did it. But when I was going through all of my stuff, my instructing and trying to get on with the airlines, it was much closer to 9/11. And so there just wasn't nearly as much activity in the aviation industry. Pay was way down because there were a lot of pilots and not a lot of jobs, and they didn't have to pay as much. And so even instructors, I would say, were making probably half of what they're making now. But I think that 45 to 55 range is probably a pretty good number if you're staying fairly busy.
Okay. Okay, perfect. So you did the CFI thing for a little while. And I think you mentioned before, like, you were flying like reporters or something like that out of the local airport before you got hired on by the airlines.
Yeah. So I instructed full time for almost 2 years. And then at Fullerton Airport, where I was flying, you know, you get to know people on the field just from being around all the time. And aviation is a lot of making connections and networking and who you know. And it is a small world, and people are typically happy to help each other get where they want to go. And one of the guys I knew from being on the field was flying traffic reporters around in a Cessna 172. And he was starting to apply for the airlines. And he said, you know, if you're interested, you could apply to be a backup with me, a backup pilot, and potentially move in and take this over when I move on. And I said, yeah, I would love to do that. And so he set me up with his boss, who's down in San Diego. So I went down to San Diego and did an interview, and they hired me to do traffic. So shortly after, the other guy, Jason, moved on to the regionals, and I started doing traffic full time. And with the traffic watch, it was an interesting gig because the pay wasn't very good, but it was a lot of flying. So it was a great way to build hours. And it was a lot of really good flying with students. You're typically looking for good weather. You're flying the same maneuvers over and over, things like that. And you learn a lot by teaching other people. But with the traffic stuff, it was a ton of work on the radios. We're constantly in and out of everyone's airspace. Even if the weather wasn't great, we were trying to go. So sometimes we're flying IFR routes and getting on top of the weather just so that we could be airborne. And we had to get creative and really learn how to work within the system. So it was great experience. We'd fly about 3 hours in the morning from 6 to 9 a.m. and then 2 to 3 hours in the afternoon. So I was flying close to 6 hours a day. And now I was getting to do all the flying instead of watching a student fly. And so I really enjoyed it. It was a good gig. Good job. And I kept instructing for a little bit just to help students finish up that were already with me. It was too hard to do both because I'd be up at 4:30 in the morning to get out to the airport and do that early morning shift. And just to have to be back at the airport in the afternoon to do students in between or in the evenings was just too difficult. So I slowly phased out of instructing other than just maybe doing someone a favor here and there and just flew traffic full time. And I did that for about 2 years before getting over to the regionals.
Okay. Now, what was life like as a regional pilot then? Like, what was the scheduling like and how, like, were you married at that point or were you single?
Yeah. So I was just married. It's kind of a crazy ride. You definitely have to know what you're getting into and you have to be flexible. I think there are a lot more options now, more negotiable items now for pilots than there were back at my time. For me, it was 05. It's when I finally got to go to ground school and go to the regionals. And my wife and I got married in October of 04. And I officially got hired about a month later with Mesa Air. And they're based out of Phoenix and got my ground school date. But again, it was, there weren't a lot of ground schools being offered just because the hiring was still very slow at that time. And so about a week before my ground school date, it got postponed. And then about a week or two later, it got postponed again. So it ended up being a few months before I actually got to go to ground school. But then I went and for ground school, I went to Phoenix and I had 4 weeks of school there in Phoenix. And so my wife stayed in California. She was working as an elementary school teacher. And, you know, she came out and visited on the weekends or things like that. But for the most part, I was just living and breathing aviation because it's a ton of information. Going from a small Cessna to a jet is a huge transition, tons to learn how airlines operate, all the regulations involved. So there was just a ton of work to do. So I was in class all day, every day. And then I'd go back to my hotel room at night and just study. And so that was the first 4 weeks of ground school. And then assuming you do well and you pass all your tests through ground school, then you go on to simulator training. And for the simulators, you get partnered up with somebody. And we lived in some housing that they had there near the simulator building. And I think our lesson time was midnight to 2 a.m., something like that. So because they would bring, it was the same facility that the pilots would come in for all their recurrent training and things like that. Those of us that were new, we would have our simulator lessons at night and then one person would go and the other one would observe and then we would switch seats. So one person would be in the left seat, one would be in the right seat. And we had an instructor that's there talking you through everything. And then you would switch. And after both of us were done with our lessons, go home, go to sleep. And then we'd get up the next morning and start studying together. And we've got cockpit posters on the wall and, you know, we're running procedures and memorizing what buttons do. And that was our focus. That was our full-time job is just learning how to fly the plane and run procedures and deal with emergencies and all of that.
Now, they paid you this entire time, right? When you're in ground school and training and everything?
Yes, but it wasn't much, especially being back then versus now. Regional airline pay was notoriously low back then. I think my salary for my first year was about $21,000, which is below the poverty line in most places. And you're responsible for 50 to 90 passengers.
I know, it's crazy. Because I think, what is it now? Like 40, 50 grand or something like that as a first officer? Or is it higher?
Yeah, now they're doing signing bonuses and tuition reimbursements and all kinds of stuff. So now I would say your first year is probably closer to 60 and your second year is maybe a little bit less because of signing bonuses and things like that. But you're also going to progress within the airline a lot faster. So the pay is completely different, much better.
Now, what type of benefits do they give you? I mean, obviously they give you like what, health coverage? Do they have a retirement plan, like a 401k? Do they have profit sharing?
From the regional perspective, you've got health benefits. I believe we had the option of a 401k, but there was no matching or anything like that.
Okay. So no matching at all?
No. Now, all of that, I know with the majors like American, United, Delta, Southwest, that's a completely different ballgame as far as benefits go and everything else. And even the regionals might be different now. I don't know what they're offering at this point. I know it's all better, but I just don't know what it is.
Okay. Okay. Now, just looking at your time through, you know, just going through the CFI thing, the, you know, building hours, going through the regionals. I mean, what would you say? What's one financial advice that you would give people who are going through that situation?
I would say my best advice always is live within your means. It's always easy to take on a lot of debt and then it gets really difficult to pay it off. So I would say that was something that I was always pretty good about. I did take debt. I had student loans, but I also was very aware of those interest rates. And I was always paying more than the minimum payment to get rid of that debt as quickly as possible. When I was flying, one of the things that the airlines required was 100 hours of multi-engine time. And unless you were instructing students in multi-engine aircraft, there weren't great opportunities to build multi-engine time.
Yeah. And it's expensive to rent.
Yeah. So even to go become a multi-engine instructor is a decent expense. And then you're at the mercy of other students out there needing that time. And you've got to work at a school that offers a multi-engine plane because a lot of schools don't. And so I didn't do that through the pilot grapevine. I heard about a program in Florida where you could pay for 100 hours of flight time. And the catch was you had to fly overnight. So they would let you rent the airplanes from, I think it was 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. We could rent the planes, and they gave you a great deal because they're using them for training during the day. But most of the time, flight schools aren't flying their airplanes at night. And so I went to Florida. I took a loan and bought 100 hours of multi-engine time in Florida. And I flew all night for about 10 nights. I did about 10 hours a night for 10 nights in a row and came home with 100 hours of multi-engine time.
Yeah, that's really quick. Wow.
It was rough. It was hard because you're up all night long. 10 hours of flying is a ton in a day, let alone in a night. But it was cool. I mean, we're doing instrument flights and flying across all over Florida. I landed at just about every single airport in Florida. It was a good experience, but I came home with that debt and then I just paid it off as quickly as possible because I knew I already had a good chunk of hours. I had 3,000 hours of flight time, but without that 100 hours of multi-engine time, no one was going to offer me an interview. And so I had to go get it.
Nice. Okay. Well, that's good. That's really good. So after leaving the airlines, so you decided to become a teacher. So now tell us about what you're doing over there at Canyon High School then.
All right. Yeah, I'll give you a little bit of the transition there too. So I got to a point where flying with the airlines that I realized that I was just craving people. I love working with people, getting to know people, helping people. And with being an airline pilot, you have a lot of downtime in hotels and airports. And I was always good about, you know, if I'm in a new place, I would leave the hotel and go explore and make the most of it. And I loved doing that. But at the same time, I was starting to question whether this was something that I could really do for a 30-year career. And I was just feeling like I needed to do something different. So I never got tired of the flying. I loved the flying. But I talked with my wife about it. And I said, you know, I think I need to make a change. What do you think? And she was supportive and said, you know, if that's what you want to do, go for it. And I had thought about teaching high school in the past when 9/11 happened. And nobody was hiring pilots. I was thinking, what is something else that I would enjoy doing? And I thought about teaching high school then. So I kind of circled back to that idea. And the easiest way for me to transition into that was for us to move back to California. And so I had to quit my airline job and we moved back to California. And my wife continued to teach elementary school. And I went to night school to do my credential and my master's as quickly as I could. And I substitute taught for a year while I was doing the schooling. And then the next year I was a math teacher, high school math teacher. So it was a quick transition. Everything went really smooth. And it just kind of reaffirmed for me that I made the right move and that it was what I was supposed to do. And so I started teaching math at Canyon High School. And a few years into it, I was seeing some of the other programs we had on campus. In the early years, we had auto shop and we had things like graphic design and photography. And there's just lots of different career-based programs. And I was going, how could I do a pilot class? Could I do a pilot ground school? So I started asking questions and a lot of people thought it was a good idea, but didn't really know how to get it started, how to do that. It's one thing if you're trying to take on a program that's already being taught at other schools, but to create one from scratch was a much bigger animal. So it took some time, a year or two of talking to people, and finally got to a point where we had a new person at our district office, and she was someone that I had known from Canyon a few years prior. And I said, hey, what do you think about this? And she said, I love it. Let's do it. Let's make it happen. So we started looking into the process, and the Orange County Department of Ed got involved and helped us do a big grant proposal with the state. And my vision was just to have a one period of private pilot ground school class. But if we were going to qualify for this program, we had to have a 3-year pathway. And so they said, can you do 3 classes? I said, I don't know. What's that going to look like? I hadn't thought about that. So we played with it a little bit and I said, I can do 3 classes. We'll find a way. And so we created 3 levels of aviation classes and then just started rolling them out 1 year at a time. We didn't have to implement all 3 in the first year because obviously they have to build off of each other. And so we rolled out the first one and then the next year we added another class. And then the year after that, we added another level. And now we're at a point where the program continues to slowly grow. And this year we're up to about 100 students in our aviation program and I have 4 different classes and it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about the aviation program. So you mentioned like it's ground school, right? For students. Now, let's say, do they have to join, like freshman year? Can they join like any other years? And what does that pathway look like, I guess, from beginning to end?
So we have a freshman level class. Actually, this year, coming into this year, was the first year that we actually implemented an application process because of it continuing to grow and not knowing if we could actually take all of the students that were interested into the program until we hire more staff. And so we have a freshman level class that any freshman wanting to go into the aviation program has to take that class. And it's a careers in aviation class, pretty broad. We talk about all kinds of different things like air traffic control and maintenance and engineering and space and history of aviation. And so it's just a very broad aviation class. And then from there, the next year is Aviation 1. And that's where we start getting into more of the private pilot content, start to introduce them to some of the material that they're going to need to know if they want to become a pilot. But it's also broad enough that we talk about the drone side of being a pilot. We still talk about things like air traffic control and maintenance because I've had students go all the way through the program and their desire the whole time was to be an aircraft mechanic or an air traffic controller or aerospace engineer. And I don't want it to be so focused, oh no, we only do pilots here. And so being that we have 3 years, I'm able to keep it broad enough that students can still see value in it, even if they're not wanting to become a professional pilot. But if they want to join that second year, any sophomores through seniors that want to get into aviation for the first time, they could join that second year class. They would skip the freshman class and go into Aviation 1. And then our Aviation 2 class is the full-blown ground school. We cover all the content required for a private pilot's license. And those are only students that have already taken Aviation 1 and they're back for more. And through Aviation 1 and 2, and with a little intro in the career focus class, we have some really cool flight simulators and we do flight lessons. I took all the flight lessons I used to do with students in actual airplanes and broke them up into smaller pieces and created lessons for students to do on the simulators in the classroom. And we just do that during class time about once a week as part of their training.
Yeah, that's kind of fun to be able to use simulators too. And it's not just textbook and just memorization of different items and stuff like that. You're able to just kind of apply all that, whatever they're learning, by using simulators.
Yeah, the simulators are huge because for some students, that's the thing they look forward to the most. I have students that are in the student center with me every nutrition and lunch, just coming in to fly the simulators. So they're doing it in their off time as well. But they give students a chance to practice what we're talking about in class. So they get some hands-on application. It's basically set up like a Cessna 172. So we've got full controls and pedals on the floor and 3 screens to give them a good view. And they're running actual flight lessons. So then they're also learning how to fly a plane, because as they go out and go do flight training on their own, our students are getting through their actual flight training really fast because they've already learned it. They already know how to do it. So it's pretty cool how well it translates to the actual airplane.
Yeah. And I'll say it does help. I mean, I've been doing flight sims for years now, probably like over 10 years. I started my PPL training. I have like about 6 hours in the Cherokee now. And so, you know, I would say it definitely helps a lot, you know, as far as being able to just kind of fly the plane, maintain level altitude, climbs, turns, all that kind of stuff. It does help. And even like talking to ATC, it does definitely help. You know, I think one thing that at least me, like, yeah, at least I need to work on is looking outside the window instead of focusing in on instruments, just because as a sim pilot, you know, that's kind of what you tend to focus in on.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually in the sim, the views out the window aren't that great and you're focused on all the stuff in the cockpit, but that's a huge benefit as well. You're learning to read the instruments. Where's the throttle? Where's the mixture? Where's the trim? all those things were things that when I started flying my sophomore year at Baylor, I knew zero. Mm-hmm. I knew nothing about airplanes. I felt so lost and behind because it was just overwhelming. Everything was brand new to me. And I feel like these students are going and jumping in an airplane, and if you let them, they could start it up, taxi it, and they could go fly it. It may not be perfect or pretty, but they know enough to just go do it all without even having an hour in an actual airplane. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Now, what's next for you and what's next for the aviation program over there?
I always love getting students to go fly. So I'm always trying to get them, you know, encourage them to at least go out and do a demo flight at a flight school or actually go do some flight training. I think to date, we've had about 10 or 11 students get their license while they've been high school students still, which is really cool when you have high school students on campus that are licensed pilots. But that's obviously not the majority. The majority of them aren't ready, or just the time commitment or the financial commitment or whatever. So I'm pushing them outside the classroom and trying to get them to go do internships or flying or whatever. I've got a few students that work at different airports. We've had students that have done internships at maintenance facilities or an aerospace engineering internship or working at different airports as an intern while they're still in high school. So that's a big one for me because I think they're getting to actually go do it. And as a program, I'm hesitantly hoping it just continues to grow. It's getting a little bit too big for just me. And so that's why I say hesitantly, because it's always tricky to grow and bring in new people. But it's a good problem. It's a good problem to have. And I'm anxious to see every year it's kind of waiting to see what are the numbers going to look like next year? And then how do we proceed? So I want to see our program stick around for a long time. It's a lot more work than being a math teacher was, but it's fun too, because I'm getting to do something with students that they're really into. And we get cool guest speakers and we do some pretty neat field trips and just get to go do aviation experiences. Just things like guest speakers. We've had all the airlines come in: American, United, Delta, Regionals, UPS, and FedEx. We've had NASA pilot and every branch of the military. And so we get all kinds of people coming in to speak to students and share what they do and how they got there. And so that's pretty cool too. For me, going into aviation, all I knew was an airline pilot. I mean, that was pretty much it. I didn't know what else there was to do. And there are so many things that students can do in aviation, whether it's on the business side of aviation or different types of pilots, or now with drones taking such a big role, we don't even know what jobs are going to be available to these students when they get a little bit older, because it's changing all the time.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And it's exciting. Yeah, that's exciting that you're bringing aviation to these young individuals and just having them experience it and things like that. And it's definitely not something I ever went through when I went through school. But, it's probably something I would have been interested in, just kind of going through high school and stuff like that. Now, the listeners out there, I mean, is there anything that people can do to help you and your program?
I love spreading the word that we exist, just because my goal is to get students coming into the program that do have an interest in aviation and a desire to go do something with these classes and with that learning, because I feel like we can offer students a really big head start if they're interested in getting into the aviation industry. And every year we have students that are transferring in from other school districts because they want to be in the aviation program, which is really cool, because then I know they're dedicated. They're making a big change because they really want to do this. So I'm always trying to spread the word about our program, just in what we have to offer and the benefit it has for students. Financially, equipment, just the 6 simulators we have in the classroom are expensive, and they're computers. So parts start to go bad. Computers need updated, things like that. So that kind of support is always helpful, is always beneficial. And then I think anytime there's someone has a unique background or willingness to help us pull off a cool field trip or come in and speak to the students, sharing their story and their experiences, that's always really cool.
Yeah, that's neat. That's really cool. Well, hey, thank you so much for joining me. We're going to end with, let's say, a couple of fun questions to end this. So let's see, what did you fly over at the regional? Was it an Embraer or a CRJ?
It was a CRJ. We had the CRJ 200, 700, and 900. Basically, it was 50, 70, and 90 passenger planes. And we were licensed to fly all 3. So sometimes you'd show up and you were flying the 200, and other times you were showing up and flying the 700, and just depended on the shift.
Okay. Now, out of everything that you've ever flown, what would you say is your favorite aircraft?
Oh, man. My very first student, after he got his license, he retired and bought a seaplane. And he took me with him to Muskoka, Canada, north of Toronto, to pick this plane up. And we flew it from there all the way back to California. And it's an amphibious plane, so it has gear and stuff that come out of the belly. And it's a Lake 200. And so the belly of the plane was the boat. And it had these butterfly doors and pusher prop up on top. And it was just a unique airplane. People always looked at it when you parked at an airport. Landing on the water was a really cool experience. So he and I flew that together quite a bit. Even though he had his license, he always liked me to go with him because he said my CFI stood for cheap flight insurance, just to make sure he didn't get himself into trouble. And so I have a lot of time in that plane. And that was definitely one of my favorites just because it was fun. And then, I mean, as far as the CRJ was the only jet I ever flew, but it's just such a different experience after being in small airplanes for over 3,000 hours to get in a jet and do that was pretty awesome.
Yeah. Oh, I imagine. I imagine it's pretty cool. Just the other day, we had it was a Citation. I think it was like a CJ3 or something like that taxi past us. And it was just like, you know, I just imagine like it would just be a really cool experience flying a jet. All right, let's see. And then last question, do you have any interesting or maybe even like funny aviation story that you'd like to share?
I've got plenty, but one that I think is fun to share, especially when I'm talking to my students and things like that, is my very first flight with the airline. Because you go, I think a lot of people don't realize that the simulator training is all you get with the airlines. And so I went from flying Cessna 172s, four-seat airplanes, to training in a jet, but all of my training was in the classroom and in the simulators. And so my very first flight in the jet was with passengers on board. And so I remember standing at the jetway, just kind of smiling and waving at people as they come on. And in my head, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, they have no idea. I've never flown this plane before. I've never even flown a jet before. And that probably makes people nervous hearing that. But the training is so good. The sims are so good that you can do that and you can translate it right over. But I just remember that being kind of a surreal experience sitting there thinking that.
So they didn't even have you go out there, like do patterns or anything like that?
No.
That's pretty amazing. How was that flight?
Do you want to know that? Right. That's one of the things. Do you want to know?
I know. Seriously. How was that actual first flight then for you?
It was great. And you're with a training captain, someone that's got a lot of hours, and they're there to help you ease in, and they could easily fly the plane by themselves if you weren't doing your job. And so it wasn't a high stress situation. It was just a cool opportunity. And my first 4 weeks, you go through 4 weeks of training in the airplane, just flying the line. And so those 4 weeks were out of Phoenix before I moved back east.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, that sounds like a blast. And Steve Smith, thank you for joining us over here at the Level Playing Field podcast. And, you know, it was great just listening to you about your experiences as a regional pilot, about, you know, the aviation pathway program that you guys are doing at the school. I think it's great that you're introducing these to introducing aviation to young individuals. So keep on doing what you're doing. Hopefully, you know, you guys get what you need and you guys keep on growing. And I think that's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Level Playing Field podcast. Make sure to visit our website, thelevelplainfield.com, where you can subscribe to the show so you'll never miss a single episode. If you found value in this episode, please rate us on iTunes or simply tell a friend about us. Join us again next week for a chance to propel your knowledge to new heights.